in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, we check up with Howard Chaykin and see how things are going on Squadron Supreme. Howard has taken the series into a new direction. Number 4 just came out last week, and we check on the status of the series. We'll also talk about his collaborations with Matt Fraction and Rick Remender on Punisher War Journal, Garth Ennis on The Phantom Eagle, the 2006-2007 Blade series with Mark Guggenheim, and we go through our usual maze of 20th century pop culture references. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. At InStock Trades, you'll receive free shipping for orders $50 or more and 35% off the usual cover price. How's this for a deal? One of the books we talk about with Howard Chaykin, his classic run on American Flag. And at InStockTrades.com, you can purchase the definitive edition American Flag collection. It retails for $99.99 at InStockTrades.com, just $62.99. Don't forget about InStock Trades' sister site discount comic book service at DCBService.com for all your pre-ordered monthly needs. Major publishers, you'll find discounts up to 40% off specials every month. For more details, visit their websites, InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and discount comic book service at DCBService.com. Our conversation with Howard Chaykin begins with a look at a new project coming out in December, a one-shot of Captain America from the 1950s.
I'm doing a book called America First, which is basically Captain America Comic Smasher. It's Captain America 1956.
Very cool.
And I'm writing and drawing. I've delivered the first 11 pages. I'm waiting to see color from the fabulous Edgar Delgado. And as I speak, I'm doing polish on pages 12 through 22, and trying to get these into the office.
Is this fitting into Marvel's continuity, where it's the other Captain America of the 1950s, or?
Yes.
Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, basically, the project started under Aubrey Sitterson, who's since left, but has been picked up by the equally fabulous Janine Schaefer. She's my editor on this. And it's me doing the 50s, which I haven't done in a long time, having a great time with that. You know, I love that reference shit. You know, here I am. You know, after coming off this ass beater of doing Phantom Eagle, which was so researched it killed me, I jump into something else that's got just as much reference and research. And, but, you know, I'm a glutton for punishment.
But you always handle history really well.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you very much.
Well, it is. It's always interesting to see it come through your transom and come out. And I thought you and Ennis were a great team on the Phantom Eagle. And, you know, this one-shot that Herb Trimpe does 35 years ago, I thought you guys fleshed it out, and it was a great World War I story.
Well, what was interesting was, you know, I hadn't seen that book literally since it came out, you know. I mean, and I had no memory of it beyond its goofiness, because it was a pretty cool book. And I saw it, and when I started the new version, I took a look at it, and I was blown away by the quality of graphics of Herb's stuff. And that might have been his first job for the company. And I've actually seen Herb more in the past year than I have in years. We found ourselves at conventions together in a number of places.
Okay.
And I told him flat out that, you know, the drawing might have been a bit wonky, but the design, the layout, the graphics were dynamite. It's just a great-looking book, particularly in its time, you know. And when Garth proposed this idea, I jumped on it because I liked the period. It was an opportunity to work with Garth. We'd only done one job before. We did that Punisher 50 together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very satisfying experience and an ass kicker. I mean, I can tell you right now, it was, I'm a bit OCD, so's Garth. And, you know, we both sort of, you know, knuckled down and ass kick reference at the ass. It was just really that powerful. So we're busy.
That's really cool. I really enjoyed it, and that war is really fascinating anyway, because it is because it's been nearly 80 years or whatever. It is kind of the forgotten war, 90 years I suppose now. My God.
The weirdest thing is that after all this, I've done two major World War I sequences in two books that I've done over the past year. I did that huge World War I stuff with Wolverine.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And here I am doing air war of that period. So I had a lot of the reference that I had accumulated for Wolverine ended up getting, you know, serving in this one as well. My one regret is that I was stuck with having to do something that had been set up previously in terms of the helmets that the Wolverine was wearing in that book. in the era that I was drawing, the Canadians went into combat without helmets.
Really?
They wore field caps.
Wow.
I'd very much like to have done that instead. But I was stuck with what had already been established for me. There was no getting around that.
Wow, that is such a crazy war because they were still even using 19th century technology.
Exactly. As late as the 1930s, 1939, the Polish cavalry, was mowed down by German tanks, and the same is true of the World War I. You had 19th century tactics. You had these imbecile bloviating generals sending men to their certain death just to basically maintain a front.
Wow.
Both books were really just a great job to do. And now I'm on Cap, as I said.
Yes.
I finished my run on Punisher War Journal 2 weeks ago.
Oh, no kidding.
I was booked to do 23, and then they Axel asked me to do 24 and 25, which I was grateful to do because I love working with Matt and Rick. And here I am. I'm in a position where I'm drawing other people's scripts, I'm writing for other people, and I'm drawing and writing my own stuff. So I'm in hog heaven, man.
That's great. I've spoken to Matt and Rick lately, and they really loved working with you. And they were even saying, man, this is, I forgive me for aging you, but, really, guys growing up reading you and loving your stuff
right.
and having the opportunity to work with you. And I do want to talk about Cap, but first, working with those two guys, because I think they're really interesting writers.
Mm-hmm. I do, too.
Well, there you go. And I saw in an article that you did talking about Squadron Supreme, you talked about recognizing the generations that have come after yours and fitting maybe some of your writing ideas to, just the expectations or the thought process that maybe these new generations are going through today. I was wondering what it was like working with them and, what you thought of the process.
Well, I mean, Matt and Rick both were very incredibly accommodating. They didn't make my life any easier beyond that accommodation, because they're both really completely insane and dirty guys.
Yes, they are dirty guys. I know them.
But yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
They verge on the disgusting. And but that said, they were able to accommodate what I needed from them in the most perfect way, and then ultimately they came up with some stuff that was very challenging to do. But I think I did what I could to step up to the challenge. Particularly the Brooklyn Bridge sequences were insane.
Okay.
Mostly because neither of them have lived in New York, so they didn't really have a sense of the scale and geography of the Brooklyn Bridge, and making that work was a challenge. I'll leave it at that. I told Matt. Actually, I might be seeing Matt this weekend. As a matter of fact, he's coming out of Santa Barbara.
Oh, very cool.
But I had a great time doing that stuff. It was really, really, very, very satisfying work in the best sense of the word. I couldn't have had a better time. I could have had a better time if someone else had done it for me, and I could have sat down and eaten macaroni and cheese for the rest of my life. It doesn't seem to work out this way.
Well, let's talk about Cap for a second, because
or macaroni and cheese.
Well, right? My preference would be Kraft, but
it's nice to know that you're a victim of commercialism. You got to go for the homemade shit, pal. And it's always about the homemade. At any rate, yes, Captain America.
So what can you tell us about the story? It's in the 50s. Brubaker has gone back to this character and brought him back to the modern age. So it's going to be fun to kind of fill the void, because outside of, there's the original comic books, of course, from the 50s. There were only a handful, am I correct?
I don't know. The stuff I've seen is this great Johnny Romita stuff. I mean, Johnny R. John was a guy who, like a lot of members of his generation, was heavily inspired by the Kniff style.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Although in his case, it actually, oddly enough, it resonates more with Frank Robbins. There's a lot of Frank Robbins in John Romita Sr.'s early work. I'm not sure he's aware of it, but as someone who paid close attention to this stuff for all my professional life, it's there. And these stories are a lot of fun. They're very goofy. They're very much without being as silly, say, as the Fighting American stuff that Jack and Joe did,
mm-hmm.
Because of the distance in time, they're pretty wacky, but a lot of fun and graphically really interesting. So And I mean, what I've done is I've somewhat accommodated the Captain America costume from that period. It's a bit different.
Oh.
Which most people don't notice that the stars stop along the ribcage. They don't continue around the back. The stripes, rather.
Oh, okay, okay.
His belt has stars on it, and the A on his outfit on the face mask.
Mm-hmm.
Very different shape than the one that's being done contemporarily. It's rather than being this huge chunky A that sits on his face, it's actually a fairly thinly outlined white on blue. It's a bit different.
Oh wow!
And I've accommodated that just basically, you know, because why not? You know,
sure.
Do something a little different. Nick Fury plays a pretty strong part in it in the book.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
I've always liked the idea of Fury as a great transitional figure from World War II to the Cold War and Cold War and beyond. And he's sort of the voice of reason to a great extent in the book itself. He plays a very big part in getting a lot of the general action in motion. And we deal with a lot of 50s iconography in a political state and also in a kind of an American small town way. You know, it is Captain America commie smasher. So we are after all smashing commies.
So this is like him going after cells of, you know, undercover commies that are pretending to be normal Americans, and
in the most specific way, yes.
But cool.
It's far from everyday Americans. It's a bigger deal than that.
Okay. And was Fury in on? And I don't want to spoil the plot, so tell me, shut up, read the book. If this is a wrong question, but was Fury in on the fact that this wasn't Steve Rogers and this is a, you know, Grant, whatever his name was. Or I don't even know. Are you using? Wasn't it? I'm confusing what was written in the 50s with that 40s serial. As far as what
I forgot all about with who was the guy who played Captain? He was such a goofy guy.
Was it started with a D? I want to say maybe not.
No, it's some Dick Purcell.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Dick Purcell. Yeah. Okay.
Going back to my memory of Screen Thrills Illustrated, and with embarrassment and shame. I'm actually conflating a bunch of that stuff, but it is. I mean, yes, Fury does know. Actually, Fury is our venue for finding that out, for doing the origin in the context of the book.
Okay, that's great.
I've come up with a fun way for that to be played out. I think you'll dig it, and we'll also see, you know, a lot of what, you know, the great Soviet perfidy of that period. I grew up expecting to be blown to kingdom come by the great conflict between godless communism and godless capitalism. Things didn't work out that way, I'm glad to say.
Thankfully, yes.
Not yet. I mean, the day is young, though. You know, it looks like it carried away.
Well, we've got other enemies, too, to worry about. As Sarah Palin has said, that, you know, Putin has reared his head over our...
Don't get me started about Sarah Palin.
I really
don't want to do this. You really don't want to do this.
I know who we're talking to, man. It's all right.
I don't want to go here.
No, I'm a bleeding heart left winger as well, man. Are you kidding? No, you're
my heart, my heart is pumping. No more bleed. It's just I'm so fed up. It's outrageous. At any rate, so we'll shelve the Sarah Palin-ness to the side.
Fair enough.
But no, it's I mean actually being able to putting aside. I mean I come from quite literally a family of. My parents grew up I grew up in a family that was extremely committed to the idea of anti-communism, but also leftism.
Okay.
And I'm pretty comfortable with that. At any rate, putting that on hold to do what is basically a fairly right-wing superhero in this version of Cap was a challenge that I found was kind of entertaining. And, you know, some fairly wacky ideas came through it, and I'm having a ball with this. I mean, right now, as I speak, I'm polishing the sequence where the doctors are working over this guy, turning him into the new Captain America. I'm doing a whole little background flashback which reveals the origin of the character. So it's kind of satisfying.
That's really cool. And going back to that Dick Purcell cliffhanger serial. You know, it's funny, I understand how people today will look at that, given the body of work of good and decent superhero movies that we have now, and they got to understand, I mean, we love that stuff, but, you know, that was all we had, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess a guy growing up in the 60s and 70s, yeah, that's all we had to really enjoy, so,
many, many years ago when I was a little boy. I mean, I couldn't have been any older than 13 or 14. The 8th Street Playhouse, the long-gone 8th Street Playhouse, ran the entire Batman serial, the 1949 Batman serial, the one with Bob Lowry.
Okay.
In a single chunk.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Like four and a half hours, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I went there. I was there. In for a penny, in for a pound, man. You know, I was, you know, that goofy outfit, the gut, the whole deal.
Sure.
And I just loved it. You know, it was just fabulous.
That's hilarious. Well, that's great. When does this camp series start?
Pardon me?
When does the cap...
Well, it's not a series. It's a one-shot. It's a 44-page one-shot.
Oh, okay.
Which I believe is out in December.
That's great.
I'm pretty sure it's coming out in December.
Very cool.
My drop dead is the middle of November, and I will make that deadline with plenty of time to spare.
So, excellent.
I'm doing my anally retentive tweakage.
Okay. Very cool.
I might add, anally retentive. It's pathetic. Shamefully so.
Well, before we get to Squadron Supreme, I wanted to ask about Blade, because when I spoke to you last, it was at the beginning of the process, and I don't think the series had even started yet. And I just want to tell you, I really enjoyed it, and I'm sorry that it didn't last, because...
I certainly wish you told a million of your friends, goddammit.
I was telling my friends. It was the best book you're not reading. I do these podcasts enough that I always have an opportunity to talk about books that aren't selling well, but should be. Yeah, you and Guggenheim, I thought, did a great job. It was fun. And also, it was really fun seeing a lot of characters, Marvel characters, in your body type. Because, like, your Spider-Man was a meatier Spider-Man. He wasn't fat at all, but he was just a more muscle-like, and he was in the black outfit, and it was really cool, because it was a Howard Chaykin Spider-Man, as opposed to, you know, variations of either Romita or... you know, Bagley or any of the guys that have been doing him the last 30 years. And I thought it was kind of neat.
You know, until only recently, I've never felt comfortable drawing Batman. I've always felt that I never quite got the character. And I just recently, over the past, I'd say 5 years or so, have gotten to the point where I mean, starting with that black and white I did. And Spider-Man is another character I find very difficult to do.
Okay.
Because I'm old school, and I hate to say this, but, you know, Ditko is Spider-Man for me.
Sure.
It's that wacky character, and I mean, I was a huge Ditko fan. I was a Marvel maniac. I mean, I was a member of a member of the Mary Marvel Martian Society. You know, there I was, pathetic but true. You know, and you know, so Spider-Man would always be drawn by Ditko for me, in the same way that until recently I couldn't get past Dick Sprang's Batman. You know, I love that fake Chester Gould kind of stuff.
Okay, absolutely, with the giant typewriters and everything.
Yeah, and also just the giant jaw. I mean, for me, Batman was a Dick Sprang character, you know, kind of weirdly proportioned, you know, grotesquely delineated villains. You know, I love that stuff. if I could ever, you know, approach the character in any way, that would be the direction I'd love to take it in. So I love when Dave Gibbons does those occasional 50s pastiches of Jerry Robinson's Batman. He does a great job at that.
Absolutely. Well, and the back to Blade himself, I thought I really enjoyed the series, and it's cool to see that the characterization that Guggenheim gave him seems to be continuing in Paul Cornell's Captain Britain story, because Blade has now appeared there. And, you know, I mean, because of the film, there have been a few tries to kind of bring Blade back, and it's a shame that he can't seem to maintain his own ongoing series, but I really think that... The physical design that you gave him and the characterization that Guggenheim gave him, I hope will stick in a way that the few times during the Blade movies that they tried didn't. It seemed a little too 90s.
The happiest moment I had was on Blade was when I said I'd like to make him look like a matinee idol, because I really wanted to do a guy with a pompadour and with good hair. You know, just one of those things. Because the guy's supposed to be, you know, over 100 years old and nearly immortal. So there was no reason for him to be wearing a fade or anything like that.
Right.
and I wanted to see about, you know, giving him something that would reflect a timeless idea, a timeless look. And that was what I mean, and my editors were kind enough to give me the go and, you know, say, do what you need. And I had a great time with that. I mean, Blade was an amazingly satisfying book on so many levels. It was great to draw. Guggenheim gave me just phenomenal stuff to have a party with. And as I've said more than once, he's unbelievably artist-friendly. his scripts break down and draw as rapidly and as easily as anything I've ever worked on, period.
Wow. So he took to the comic.
I loved working with Googie. He was just the greatest. I mean, I'm not saying that he's the greatest writer in the comic book world. He's a terrific writer. Not my point. My point really is that beyond the quality of the material, he knows how to collaborate with artists like a son of a bitch. It's just the greatest.
They were open enough to your, you know, how in what sense? I mean, like...
I mean, it wasn't that he accommodated my sensibility.
Okay.
It's that I was able to see what he was doing and run with it without the slightest bit of effort or hesitation. His stuff broke down so quickly. I mean, for example, when Matt and I started on Punisher, I asked him for a couple of things in the script, and he came across with them. But, I mean, there was still some stuff that I really had to parse out and figure out how to do, a couple of gunman sequences and stuff like that. And that frequently happens with gun-based books, okay? Because you're not having characters interacting in the same physical space. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
Whereas in Guggenheim's case, I mean, he threw me some serious insanity, particularly in the first couple of issues. That bit with Dr. Doom with the time traveling platform. The bit in the first issue with the reflection of the mirrors and the revelation of the guy on the no reflection in the glass doors of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very challenging. But once they worked out, they were really successful ideas. I'm not sure, and I think Mark said that what I came up with on the second one with the time platform had nothing to do with what he visualized. But again, there were some really interesting ideas and challenges. And then in the basics, the page to page stuff, everything broke down phenomenally easily and phenomenally quickly. There was a clarity of vision on his part that made perfect sense to me. Whether I agreed with it textually or not, and frankly, my job as an artist in a comic book job is to make the writer look good, because I've always said that much of the writing in a comic book is done by the successful artist, that I had absolutely no problem whatsoever in making his stuff work. It just really just jammed.
That's great. Well, I hope you guys get a chance to work together again.
I'd love to again.
Down the line, yeah.
He's someone I'd love to work with again.
You know, and as we talk about Squadron Supreme, I got to ask you, because it would seem your sensibilities are in tune with Marvel's Max line, and obviously the Phantom Eagle was a Max line thing, but are there any chicken-only Max line ideas that might be coming?
Yes.
Good.
I can't tell you what they are.
No problem.
Actually, my next major project.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, then, you know, we'll have to do this again when you're public.
Marvel has a policy, which I respect, of wanting to control delivery of information to the market.
Oh, of course.
And I'm willing to accept that because they do a better job of promoting me than I do them.
No problem, man.
So you'll hear about it soon enough. And suffice to say that I'm champing at the bit to do it.
That's great. And one other project I know you've done in the last few years that everyone, I think, was waiting for an American publisher was that Western that Disney Italian had, or am I...
I'm desperately waiting for that to get taken care of.
Okay, man.
It's kicking my... I want to see it in print.
Sure. Okay.
I mean, it's only in Italian, and I'm real happy with it. I'm real proud of this work. I'm feeling a bit stymied and bitter. It's among the best stuff I've done in years, and it's sitting out there unseen. And I'm frustrated. I'll be blunt.
No, I hope that frustration ends soon, man.
Je suis là, man. I'm there. It's very annoying. I'm just sitting here waiting for this book to be printed. I'd kill to have this book in print because I'm real happy with it. I mean, again, another example of absolutely insane historical research material. Because I did not do a comic book Western. It's a Western that takes place sometime between 1903, i.e., the Wright brothers' flight.
Okay.
And 1914. So it's between that time and before the advent of hostilities in the First World War.
Okay. Wow.
It's about a town called Century, Texas, in the West Texas Panhandle, that is experiencing the arrival of the 20th century with a bang. It's, you know, movies, cars, airplanes, paved streets, electric lights, vacuum cleaners, everything. And it's about that town's acceptance and or rejection. Hold on. Mechanical fence is shocking.
No problem.
Of of the advent of the 20th century and all it stands for. And I'm real happy with it. And I had a great time doing it. It kicked my ass, again, because it was just incredibly reference-heavy. And I would kill to see it out in print.
Well, I hope it happens, man. I remember Dan Barrett telling me about it, too. I mean,
it's just a matter of sitting on my thumbs waiting for it to come across, you know. So it will definitely see print. It's not going to fade into the... There's a great apocryphal job from the early 1950s, which only my generation barely even remembers, and it's never seen because it disappeared. A Conan comic book from 1953, drawn by Gray Morrow.
Wow.
Yeah. The artwork disappeared long ago. And if anybody ever showed up with stats on that one, that would be a kind of like the golden mean. You know, Gray came to New York City in the early 50s just in time for EC to die.
Yeah.
He was encouraged to come here by the EC guys because they knew all those guys.
Oh, literally, I didn't realize that. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Jeez.
He was pretty good at that point, I mean, in that early 50s time. And he hung out with Angelo Torres and Gray Morrow. They all lived in the same building. So that there is that apocryphal job. But I don't believe that Century is going to turn that kind of apocrypha. I know it'll see print eventually.
Okay. Very cool. Well, Squadron Supreme, you know, 4 issues in, including this week's issue. And,
I just delivered 8, and I'm working on 9 as we speak. I'm way ahead.
Okay, excellent. That's good, because much like Blade, do we know how it's doing?
Beats the hell out of me.
Okay.
I tend to stay away from the numbers, because they either make me hubristic or depress me, so I just stay away.
Okay. Well, I'm enjoying the story so far. It's been fun getting to know these new characters.
I signed a lot of books in Baltimore and in St. Paul this weekend.
Well, that's good.
But I couldn't tell you.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Where, you know, obviously some of these characters are ciphers of a lot of Marvel characters. I mean, we're seeing some similarities.
Are they really? You think so?
Yeah. just wanted to state the obvious. All right. There.
Never know. I know. I mean, you have no idea what may be obvious to you. It's not necessarily obvious to other members of the audience. I wish I were kidding, you know.
Well, yeah, I understand. So, you know, you've wanted to expand the Squadron Supreme universe and kind of show heroes, or superpowered beings, I should say, beyond the core of what we've seen so far from Straczynski. And really, I'm glad to see, these are new characters. These aren't Gruenwald characters that are respawn, are they?
No. I mean, basically, my marching orders came from Joe Quesada. He called me up and said, hey, how would you like to do this book with this particular idea in mind? And I said, that sounds really cool. And so I ran with what he suggested. And I've been having a pretty good time all along. I opted to take a slower route than I normally might. I felt it was important because there were so many new characters coming in that I'd not rush things and overload and front load too much material. So you see a number of characters who may have familiar avatars show up as the series progresses. And I'm having a really good time writing this book. It's a bit of a departure for me because it certainly is not a traditional superhero book in any sense. But I'm trying to think of it as a sort of a postmodern superhero book. And, you know, play with the idea of, you know, a female character with the sort of power that you've seen in Arachnophilia, and a relationship among 4 people who were transformed in an odd and cryptic way by experiences in space, things like that.
So sure.
Familiar ideas, and I'm trying to find unfamiliar and interesting approaches to illustrating those ideas. And they seem to be pretty happy. I have no idea how the book is doing. I couldn't tell you.
Well, I kind of look at it the same way that I enjoyed the Your Challengers of the Unknown, in that you've taken a title, and I understand that eventually we will likely see more of the Squadron. At this point, 4 issues in, we've seen Blur. But outside of Blur and Fury, who obviously was a big part of Supreme Power, otherwise it's been a lot of these new characters.
Well, you will definitely see the original members of the Squadron Supreme.
Okay.
This I promise you. yeah. I mean, I promise you this categorically. I'm not even going to be clever.
That's cool. Well, I kind of figured eventually that they're all going to come together. But
But and not in a good way.
But that's the interesting thing. I like watching this team be built. And also, I just like... You just have this facility of, I think, coming up with interesting new characters. I felt that way. I'm not being nice, because I really felt that way about the Challengers. And I'm a big fan of Rocky Lane and all the guys, you know.
On the other hand, I felt that it was time to sort of look at use the title for a different language, in mm-hmm. the same way that Andy did with the Losers.
Yes.
You know, to try to come up with a different thought process. And... And, you know, typically I was, you know, taken to task on the internet, referred to as, quote, a left-wing faggot. which I embrace with glee. And, you know, I'm okay with this. I mean, what am I going to do? And, you know, I had a ball doing that stuff. I recognize the fact that right now I'm doing stuff that might be a bit odd for the audience, but I'm keeping plugging.
That's cool. Well, how long is this first story to set everything up? And
well, I mean, basically, I've delivered the first. They've got eight issues.
Okay.
The first arc comes to I wouldn't call it an ending, but a turn with issue six.
Okay.
And I'm going to do the same thing with issue 12.
Sounds good. What?
I'm plotting it. I mean, and again, I wouldn't call what happens at the end of six an ending by any means.
Okay.
It just pushes things in a direction that's like, oh, what the hell is that?
Well, and it's interesting having Fury, the Ultimate Fury, in this universe as a player, and I don't know how long he'll be there, but it's fun to see him in this world dealing with, you know, these new beings and assembling this new team and kind of making the best of his situation.
I mean, I'm playing him as our surrogate. He is our eyes, okay? It's a book that I felt needed a very human comment on what was going on. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Fury was the logical and perfect choice for that idea. And his relationship with Arcana. And the evolution of Burbank into an interesting character.
Okay.
There's stuff going on there, and again, Fury is our comment, our available human representative in this our world version of superheroes, that sort of thing. Okay.
Sure. I like the blank slate that the old soldier represents too. That we're not really sure. You know, he's.
You will. We'll see.
Okay.
There is clarity there.
Oh, okay.
Hold your horn.
I like his origin, at least what we've been given so far.
He's among my favorite characters in their ride. I mean, I'm trying to keep the members of the squadron that remain on Earth alive in the story, as you've seen with Nighthawk and Blur and Arcana and Burbank. And again, if you've only seen issue four, it's hard for me to go into any more detail.
No problem.
Okay.
Tell me about your artist.
Marco is a young Italian guy who's just absolutely sensational, just filled with energy, a lot of fun, and again, he's doing some amazing stuff. I mean, I'm thumbnailing the book because I wanted to sort of control the storytelling in a way that, you know, aimlessly retentive bullshit, as I said. So there is that, but he's just doing a terrific job.
That's cool.
He came back with character designs on those four astronauts that I went bug fuck for. They were just the greatest.
That's cool. Oh, that's I was going to ask that. Who was designing some of the characters?
His stuff. I mean, I didn't do character designs. I did fairly detailed descriptions, and what I got back were just insane looking. I love them.
That's great. Well, you're not the first writer artist that, when he's only writing, will submit breakdowns. Bendis says that he does that as well, and I know other writers that can do it. Will provide breakdowns, so that's fair.
You know. Well, I mean, the fact is, I was angrily retentive. You know, what can I say? I got to fight my battles where I can win them. You know.
Sure. Well, finally, after years of waiting, the Dynamite Flag collection is out.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks
the economy collapsed, so it's unaffordable.
Well, I afforded it.
Your guy. Oh, a million of your friends. I couldn't be happier to finally see it out. I was grateful enough to sign quite a few of them when I was in the St. Paul Minneapolis convention this past weekend, or last weekend rather.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's nice to return to that stuff. I just sent, speaking of left wing faggots, I just sent three books off to a campaign for called Books for Obama, in support of the material.
That's great.
Signed three copies and sent them off to the fabulous Ayelet at Waldman. Who's putting together a fundraising, great raiser for Obama. I mean, I don't think it comes as any surprise that I'm supporting it. Not a shock to the audience.
I don't think so, man. It's okay.
They can figure that out to themselves, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. That's great, man. And, you know, that's why I wonder and we don't have to go into details and scare people, but everything that is happening politically now, and Flag is
Wednesday.
Such a... Pardon?
I think we're talking Wednesday.
Yeah.
If you are curious about when, it's Wednesday.
Yeah.
We're screwed.
We're screwed Wednesday?
Wednesday. It's done. So basically have a really good dinner on Tuesday night.
And then we're all selling apples on the corner?
Absolutely. It's exactly. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's Wednesday.
Do you want to grab that?
Yeah, check with me on Thursday. You'll see what I'm talking about.
I'm
just kidding.
No, I believe me, man. I work for a radio station, and I'm shitting bricks every day waiting for the pink slip to come.
You have never heard a more grateful man to have a job. So you're talking to one now, let me tell you.
No, I'm with you. Well, that's everything, you know, and beyond the financial craziness, the you know, things that are going on politically and with the Middle East. You mentioned The Losers, which is a great, you know, great book that really was a reflection of, you know, the war on terror and everything I think that's going on now.
Mm-hmm.
Are there stories like that burning inside of you? Because Flag was such a book of its time. And, I mean, still, I think there are a lot of things going on and ideas in Flag that you can apply to today. But,
well,
I'm going to
do a new Flag story for Scott Doonbeer's charity book.
No kidding.
December, I'm going to be spending December writing for the most part. I've got a miniseries that I'm going to be writing and drawing, which I'm going to write in December. And the only drawing I'll be doing that month will be this new Flag story.
That's really cool. How long of a story is it?
5-pager.
Okay.
Which I'm assuming will address some of the issues you're talking about, because it seems to be the natural place to look.
Fair enough.
And, you know, that and a couple of covers will be my drawing for the month of December. I'm doing a lot of traveling between now and then, so I'm kind of brain dead.
I understand.
I've traveled more this year than I have, I think, in my life. I spent most of, between April and July when I got home, I was actually spent more nights in hotel rooms than I did at home. And I'm going to Germany next Tuesday, and I'm coming back for about 3 weeks, and then I'm going to Madrid.
Wow.
For two big conventions. So I guess they're catching me while I'm old and not quite dead yet.
No. I've heard good things about the European conventions, and I've never gone to any of them.
Wonderful. They're an entirely different experience. You basically do nothing. You spend your entire days eating, and then your evening sort of in a state of a physical and mental collapse.
That's cool. Are there any themes, or, you know, I mean, like, do you speak at a panel? Are you literally just doing
sure
drawings for people, or?
I'm not sure my commitments are in Germany, but I mean, in Madrid, I'm doing a master class, very similar to what I did in the. I did a seminar for at Marvel in June, at the behest of the extraordinary Klaus Janson, and I'll be doing it again next year, and it's very similar to what I did there. I basically talk about narrative as graphic design, how to tell a story visually. I try to keep it slow so it can be translated effectively, because I do tend to talk quickly. But since I've spoken in front of, you know, audiences with ACL translators, I'm learning.
Okay. It's for artists, obviously, that are just...
No. In this case, in terms of the masterclass, yes, it is.
Okay.
But the average fan could also get something out of it in terms of an understanding of the choices made, why such and such shot was chosen, why you organized the page. I mean, it all boils down to a five-panel paradigm. And it's based on a series of ideas that have evolved over the past 50 years. It's very comic book-based. It goes directly to the real differences between the comic book and the comic strip. And it's all about pagination and about organization of pattern. timing on the page, and what the white space between the panel borders means, things like that.
Okay. With that in mind, as digital comics are becoming more and more prevalent, do you see yourself working in that medium? And do you recognize differences to...
Digital comics mean delivering comics digitally, or do you mean doing them with digital technology?
In terms of delivery.
I don't see why not. I'm sort of surprised. My assumption is that ultimately the generalized delivery system will be digital. I think it's a matter of time. It may not happen until I'm gone, but and also with the collapse of the empire, who knows?
Right.
but it seems to me the most logical assumption to make that ultimately we will be in the position of delivering material digitally, most specifically. And I'm ready.
It just still comes down to what the eye takes in from the image, or
say again.
Is it mostly still, it doesn't matter that it's just the eye and how it reads the image and the sequence of images, or?
Look, I'm of the belief that my job is to continue to compete till I'm breathing my last breath. And that means, maintaining and understanding contemporary technology and not fighting it. Right now I'm doing a Photoshop tutorial because I've sort of forgotten so much that it's time for me to get back to a more generalized idea of what it calls for.
Okay.
So I believe that our job as artists is to stay abreast, keep modern, and just keep competing.
I forget which artist I spoke to recently, but I said that you were doing things with I don't even know what process you used pre-Photoshop to.
Called xerography.
Okay.
Xeroxes, an X-Acto knife.
There you go.
And workable fixative and sticky down. Spray mount. And to a great extent, I feel that I was anticipating the advent of Photoshop.
I would agree.
With a lot of the production work I was doing on Flag.
Yes, absolutely.
And also on Times Square.
Big fan of Times Square. Absolutely, man.
So I'm fairly proud of that. I mean. Whenever I get bitter, and I have plenty of room to be. There was a book that came out a couple months back called Jews in Comics, in which they did a nice two-page piece about me and American Flag, which was illustrated with artwork by Mike Bosberg.
Oh, really? Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, Mike was my chosen replacement. He's a wonderful artist, but please.
Wow.
And then there was a book about erotic comics in which Black Kiss wasn't, or and I were not even mentioned.
Jesus. Hey, what do you think of True Blood, speaking of Black Kiss? Are you watching that at all?
I'm liking it more than I expected.
Okay, because it really, the first couple...
I have to say, I watch far too much television.
Well, I kind of count on that, because the last time we talked, you threw out a litany of shows, and I was hoping to get your list of what you're watching these days, so...
I watch much too much TV.
Well, what do you like right now?
My favorite show is Mad Men. Mad Men is just... It just kicks my ass.
Oh, that's up your alley, man. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I drew it. and I love Damian Lewis on Life.
Okay, very cool.
I like Dirty Sexy Money. I have not seen the new season.
Haven't watched that yet. Okay.
The
ABC
show. Although a lot of people don't seem to be fond of it, I like the show. I love The Shield.
Oh, sure.
And I'm watching True Blood. I'm not a fan. I was never a fan of 6 Feet Under. I always found it kind of precious and annoying.
Yeah, me too.
But I rather like, I have to say, the thing I find least interesting about True Blood is the vampire. I find her great.
Oh, yeah.
And I like the other characters a lot more than I care about the vampires. Are they young adult novels or what?
Who young adult models?
Are the Charlene Harris novels young adult novels?
I honestly don't know. I hadn't heard of them before this came up.
All right. And so. Apparently they're on the New York Times paperback bestseller list.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I only read their Wikipedia entry is all that I read about them, other than seeing that behind-the-scenes setup for it.
I do like True Blood. I mean, my wife and I watched the first episode, and we were sort of like, we'll come back, let's see. And we've gotten into it. Hold on.
Sure. Okay. We're close to being done.
I fell off the no-call list.
Ah, that sucks.
Bear with me. I'm back.
No worries. We're in the home stretch. I know, and I promise.
I know you, fine, John. Don't worry about it.
Okay, man. I appreciate that. But, no, I agree with you on True Blood. I have to admit, the last episode kind of sucked me back in because I think
I'm two episodes behind. I live on TiVo.
Okay.
And with the kind of and travel I've been doing, I'm way behind on a bunch of shit. I mean, last night, we went to the theater yesterday, and when we got home at 8 o'clock, and I watched Mad Men on TiVo, and I watched, not this week, but last week's episode of Life.
Okay.
And I'll probably watch something tonight. I mean, again, it's all, I never watch anything live. You know, it's just, and my TiVo queue is jammed. Travel. So I'm trying to catch up and dump.
Did you watch the British Life on Mars?
Yes.
Did you watch Keitel?
Pardon me?
So yeah, and now I guess you're behind, so you maybe didn't see the premiere last week.
Not seen. I mean, I'm a big fan of Jason O'Mara. We were fans of the show he did with Kyle MacLachlan in Justice.
Oh, okay.
Nobody saw.
No.
And I've also seen his pilot for Marlowe, which was shelved because of Life on Mars.
Really? ABC. He was going to do Philip Marlowe? That's cool.
ABC shot a Marlowe pilot with O'Mara, who, by the way, is an Irishman who speaks like, you know, has that classic Gaelic accent.
Yes.
And does a pretty credible American.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I thought he was great as playing that kind of an odd recurring character on the Closer as well.
That's right. Okay, that's right.
And I'd like to have seen the David Kelly pilot that they shot.
Yeah, I'm curious about that too. I think the jury's out on what they gave us last Thursday night, but I'll stick with it for a while.
I thought Colm Meaney was a great choice to do an American version of Philip Glenister. I mean, I found the show, the British series, interesting but annoying.
Really? Okay.
I liked it. I stayed with it. I love Philip Glenister. I just think he's great.
Oh, he's the glue of the show. Absolutely.
It was just an amazing performance. Particularly because I'd only seen him before in the Sharp stuff. You know, where he always played this this Regency character. You know, if you think about it, that haircut, his look,
mm-hmm.
you take off the 70s clothes. And dress him in an 1810 British Army uniform, an officer's uniform.
Yeah, which, sure.
Looks perfectly conventional, right?
Sure.
Yeah. But I thought the guy who played Sam was so weak-kneed.
Oh, really, John Shim? Okay.
I never felt that he was able to stand up to Philip Glenister.
Oh, that's interesting, because I really loved...
I thought the show kind of wandered around a little bit more than I'd like to have seen it do so.
Did you watch Ashes to Ashes, its follow-up?
Oh, I missed it here. Did you see it?
Yes.
It came and went so quickly, I never got to see it. How was it?
It was disappointing, because they leaned too hard on Philip Glenister, or however you say his last name. And I love Keeley Hawes. I liked her on MI5.
And I never saw MI5. I mean, Ashes to Ashes came and went so quickly, I never got a chance to see any of it, which kind of pissed me off.
It was more of a comedy. I mean, it still had some drama to it, and obviously some of the cases were very serious, but I think they leaned more on the comedy than they did on Life on Mars. And I found it, you know, I mean, I loved the music. It made me laugh because that was my high school years, so that killed me. But and I liked a lot of what they did, and I'll probably come back to it. But I have to admit, I think it's a weak sister to Life on Mars.
Is it still running?
I know they've greenlit a second season. He's up for the British Emmy, whatever it is.
Glenister?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And I think that's the end of the month.
I have the new series, the American series TiVo. Mm-hmm. I was much more intrigued by it when it was the Kelly show.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just seemed like the right thing for Kelly to be doing. Particularly that, I mean, my wife remains a fan of Boston Legal. I find it very annoying.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Boston Legal either. Although I have to admit, I'm glad that, although I don't know Shatner and I don't know what kind of dick he is, but I do think it's kind of funny that he has found this new career for himself.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's the most reinvented guy I've ever seen in the show business. But my wife still loves the show. I watch it, but only in passing. I'm ready to. I mean, we watched Raising the Bar, which I got real tired real fast.
That's the TNT one, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, it's very conventional, and I'm ready to dump it. And I'm wondering. I've already given up on even considering starting watching. What you call it? 11th Hour. I just gave it up.
You know, the Patrick Stewart one was dry as yesterday's bread. It was terrible.
What the first episode?
Yes. And I couldn't, and I mean, and I didn't see the pilot. I didn't see the CBS one. I saw the one that ITV did with Patrick Stewart.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I just found it really boring.
Okay.
And I was really disappointed.
I was going to dump, I've got my own worst enemy T-vote, and I was going to dump it after I read Alan Siepenwald's columns. You read Alan Siepenwald?
No, where's his critiques?
He's with the Newark Star Ledger.
Oh, okay.
He has a great blog called What's Alan Watching?
Okay.
He was one of the talking heads on that Wired documentary, Wired Odyssey.
I didn't see that.
Oh, they aired it just before they started season 5. For my money, the best working television critic working today.
That's cool.
The website is called What's Alan Watching?
I'll check that out.
His weekly notes on Mad Men are brilliant, and his review. And I tend to take his reviews very seriously.
That's cool.
So I'd read. I mean, he was extremely unimpressed by my own worst enemy. Although the New York Manola Dargis or whatever covers Alessandra Stanley in the New York Times had good things to say about it.
Okay, what's his face's show?
Christian Slater.
Thank you. Okay, very cool.
So I mean, there's still lots of stuff out there. I mean, I'm looking forward to Burn Notice coming back because I like the series a great deal.
Me too. Great show.
I'm also looking forward to In Plain Sight, which I liked a great deal.
Really? Okay.
You didn't go for it?
No.
Didn't want to, huh?
I like
that Fred Weller. Fred Weller's really good, and I like Mary McCormick a lot.
Yeah, I like her too. I think I'm a chauvinist at the end of the day, and it really takes for it to be a female protagonist. It takes a lot for me to want to watch something. And there are shows like that, like the first couple seasons of Alias. I have to admit, it sucked me in, and I loved it.
Show I never wanted to.
No,
couldn't care less about it. I mean, and I find her very attractive.
Oh yeah,
but nothing about the show appealed to me at all.
I don't know, the pacing. You know, you watch that, and now try and watch Mission Impossible. You can't. The TV series. Oh my God, it's like, you know, being time with an hourglass. It's terrible.
I just really not interested. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think what else I'm watching.
While you're thinking, I'm going to ask you The Counterfeiters. Did you see that movie?
Ah, loved it.
Yeah, I figured, and I got to thank you for turning me on to Alan first.
Ah, I was just talking about him. He just reviewed John le Carré's new novel in yesterday's Times.
Very cool.
And he calls it le Carré's best novel in years, maybe ever.
I heard a review of it on NPR, and it sounds amazing. So I'm psyched for that too.
Unfortunately, I haven't gotten it yet. I've never read le Carré.
Really?
Simonson is a huge fan. And I'm actually, on the basis of this review, I was thinking about getting the first of the George Smileys. I only read paperbacks when I travel.
Okay.
I leave them behind. I throw them away.
Okay.
or I pass them on to flight attendants.
Sure, sure.
So it's a matter of getting paperbacks for the trip. I mean, right now I'm reading the new Stephen Hunter Bob Swagger novel at home. It's in hardcover, so I'll finish that before I leave.
Okay.
And I've got a stack of paperbacks and trades, which I mean for a 2-week trip I'll bring 6 books, and I'll leave behind. I'll read at least 4 of them and leave behind at least 4 of them. You know, one on the plane going. You know, I've got some train travel to do, so that'll also keep me occupied. Things like that.
What trades do you have lately?
What am I reading? Let's see. I just read Warlock by Oakley Hall.
Okay.
I thought it was great. I tried to read The Big Clock by Kenneth Fearing, and I just couldn't get into it at all. And I had the same reaction to Tom Franklin's Smunk. I read his first novel, which I liked okay. Hell's Hinges or something like that.
Okay.
And Dennis Lehane said great things about it, so I bought it on a log roll from Lehane, and I just don't buy it.
Okay.
In terms of hardcover, I've got a whole stack of shit on my shelf. I mean, I haven't read the new George Pelicano. I'm waiting on that. I've got the new A Novel Called Winter in Madrid by T.J. Sanson, which I hear great things about.
Very cool.
The new Dennis Lehane, which is his historical novel.
What period?
It's about the Boston police riot, a police strike in 1919.
Oh wow! Okay.
So I'm there for that. The new Lee Child was sort of disappointing. The new Thomas Perry was okay. The new John Sanford was very disappointing. The new First was fantastic. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, I haven't bought it yet. I've only bought his stuff in paperback, but I've seen the hardcover, and I've been debating. So
but what's interesting is this, and the novel that preceded it, the Foreign Correspondent, go take his stuff in a slightly different direction. They're the first books he's done that take place before the actual hostilities begin.
Yeah, I noticed that with Foreign Correspondent. Yeah,
this one takes place in 1937, and it's about a French intelligence officer attached to the French embassy in Warsaw, who through a series of unexpected events develops a contact with information in reference specifically to German tank maneuvers in the Ardennes.
Wow!
And what happens with that information?
That's cool. That's cool. You know, the whole Mo Burke story got me interested in, you know, the OSS, and I didn't realize that really pre-war, the U.S. really didn't have beyond, you know, naval intelligence and a few things like that. Really, nothing to speak of.
You got to remember that before the Second World War, almost all intelligence was naval intelligence. You know, it was the great. I mean, what ultimately one of the things that contributed to Hitler's downfall. With his refusal to take seriously the information that was coming to him from naval intelligence, which was far more reliable than the information he was getting from those who were telling him what he wanted to hear.
Wow.
And, you know, it's just, I love this shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad you read. Have you read all the first stuff now?
No, I've only got the two. I've got World at Night and Foreign Correspondent. They're the only ones I've read so far.
I would highly recommend that you get your soonest opportunity. Well, you know, World of Night has a sequel.
Yes, I know that. Yes.
But I would also suggest that you read The Polish Officer.
Okay.
Polish Officer is, for my money, his most accessible for a first time reader. His most accessible novel.
No, that's cool.
I read it and it felt like I saw it being for some reason illustrated by. It's a very episodic novel. I felt it could have been illustrated by Harvey Kurtzman.
Wow, that's cool.
In the EC style.
Sure, that's cool. Are you exclusive to Marvel?
No.
Okay, that's cool. I was wondering, you know.
I mean, one of the things I've got to get done this week is I've got covers to do for a new Vertigo series.
Oh, cool.
And I'm also doing covers for Andy Schmidt at IDW.
Very cool. That's cool. I'm wondering, with all the revival of a lot of 70s properties from DC, if any of the war or Western stuff would interest you.
No one's called me. You know, I ran into Dan at the convention in Baltimore, and we had a nice chat. But, you know, I'm actually, Marvel is keeping me incredibly busy.
Well, that's cool.
And happily so. I'm having a great time. I mean, it's, I'm getting to do all the stuff I've ever wanted to do. And, you know, I have a great working relationship with the guys up there. And I'm a very happy guy.
That's cool, man. Well, we're glad you're back, because I know you were busy in TV for a lot of time during the 90s, and I've really enjoyed the work that, you know, has come back. I loved American Century back in the day, but like I told you, I love Blade, love what you were doing with Remender and Fraction and Phantom Eagle, and I'm enjoying Squadron Supreme, so I look forward to the new announcement.
Thanks so much. I don't flatter easily, but I take it seriously. Thanks.
Thanks for your time, and let's catch up when you're ready to announce the new one.
An absolute pleasure.
That's Howard Chaykin. A nice list of books to look for. Of course, Squadron Supreme, his wrap-up of Punisher War Journal, and in December, Captain America, America First, all from Marvel Comics. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, the online bookstore where you can find great deals on hardcovers, absolute editions, omnibus editions, trade paperbacks, you name it, all with orders over $50 receiving free shipping and discounts of 35% on most books. For example, American Flag by Howard Chaykin, written and drawn, the definitive collection hardcover. It retails for $99.99 at InStockTrades.com, just $62.99. Don't forget about their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at DCBService.com for all your monthly pre-order needs. You'll find deals on major and independent publishers, up to 40% off specials. You'll find them every month. For more details, visit both sites, Discount Comic Book Service, DCB.com, and InStockTrades.com. Thanks for listening. This is John Suntress reminding you to look for more episodes of Word Balloon all over the internet. Of course, our home site, WordBalloon.com. There's a nice archive with over 175 different interviews of comic book, television, and film creators. You can also find us at Newsarama.com. We're at iTunes as well if you'd like to subscribe to our RSS feed. Also, if you'd like to leave us a review at iTunes or Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, any of the webcatcher sites, we'd certainly appreciate that. And any comments on the show, you can either go to the Word Balloon forums at wordballoon.com or jinxworld.com. Or you can leave me an email if you want, john@wordballoon.com. Thanks a lot for listening. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.